talking today with 3rd District Congressman for the state of Oklahoma, Congressman Frank Lucas. Mr. Lucas, let's talk a little bit about all the things going on regarding trade. Yesterday it was China. Today it's USMCA. Exciting time as far as some of these deals that are finally coming together.
Oh, tremendously exciting time for production agriculture and, for that matter, manufacturing in the United States. President Trump said from day one of his campaign that our trade relations with the rest of the world were unfair, unequitable to us. He was right, of course, but he was willing not only to say it, but by probably stretching federal law to enable him to use tariffs as a weapon, he compelled first our neighbors in Canada and Mexico, and then the Chinese, and for that matter, a number of other places around the world, the process of renegotiating. And what we've seen yesterday and today is beginning to bear fruit. I think we'll all be better off in the United States. I know production agriculture will be.
Well, let's talk maybe first of all about the phase one deal with the Chinese. Hard negotiations, extended negotiations, agriculture obviously targeted in a very real way in these negotiations by the Chinese against the U.S. We got billions of dollars handed out in MFP payments to farmers and ranchers. You feel pretty good about where we have finally come around to?
Yes, Ron. Not only have we made progress on ag issues, but intellectual property, technology transfer, currency manipulation, just generally expanding trade and having more access to the Chinese markets, all big wins by the president. If you look at what was pledged, the Chinese now have said they will buy $75 billion worth of manufactured goods. They'll buy $50 billion worth of energy products. At least in this number, I've seen quoted at different numbers, $45 billion in agricultural products. So opening their markets where we can fully get our soybeans, our pork, our grain sorghum, wheat and cotton back in is critically important, because we've been under price pressure now for several years in production agriculture. Some of it had to do with coming off of the drought at the first half of the last decade. Some of it had to do with the essentially two-year trade war with the Chinese. But having the Chinese agree as a big part of this to buy more U.S. ag products should give us a lift when it comes to prices. Now, how long it will take, Ron, between yesterday's signatures and actually the boats being unloaded in China, I think that we'll have to wait and see, because we'll need to see the physical commodity be delivered, I think, to have an effect on commodity prices. But we're headed in the right direction. And thank you, Donald Trump, for actually remembering production agriculture, because he was very supportive and agreed with the language to help us deal with those payments when we were under pressure, having lost the cotton market, the grain sorghum market, having lost most of the soybean market. He understood that there was pain out in the countryside, and he helped with those transition payments. Now, I know there'll be a lot of debate about how they were organized and how fast they came out, but at least he remembered the folks in the countryside as he was trying to negotiate a better deal, which will ultimately be in our interest.
I know that, we're talking obviously about the dollar amounts, and they are impressive if the Chinese live up to those agreements. But equally impressive was the improvement in some of our terms of actual trading, the non-scientific barriers, the phytosanitary standards for livestock and the like. That's really important, too, I know, for Oklahoma.
Oh, yes, and our listeners need to remember that so often in trade struggles, countries that cannot compete in production on cost or cannot compete in quality use these phytosanitary standards, saying that you can't bring your beef in or you can't bring your pork in because it's not raised in a certain way, it doesn't meet a certain standard, creating an artificial barrier to keep us out. We are still, in virtually every commodity group, when it comes to quality and price and consistency, we're still beyond second to none in the world. So reducing these artificial ways to keep our products out just enables us to do best what we do, which is raise it, process it, and put it on the boat.
Regarding USMCA, clearly we've had this conversation multiple times now since it was actually first signed by the president a year ago, a little over a year ago. Finally, it's coming across the finish line.
Absolutely, Ron. And as I'm speaking to you this moment, I'm watching a screen on C-SPAN 2 out of the corner of my eye, and it appears, if this is the final passage, that there are 90 yes votes at this moment to agree to the USMCA trade agreement. 90 yes out of 100. That's an amazing show of support for what the president negotiated with our neighbors in Mexico and Canada. Now, I know Speaker Pelosi held this up literally for months and months and months because she wasn't so concerned about equitable and fair trade moving across the borders. She had issues where she wanted to force certain labor standards on our neighbors in Mexico, certain environmental standards on our neighbors in Mexico. Ultimately, the president's trade negotiators were able to come to some semblance of an agreement that both Speaker Pelosi and the Mexican national government could tolerate simultaneously. But the real issue at USMCA was lowering the tariff rates and allowing our products to move. I always remind folks, before the trade war started, we literally sold 40% of the Oklahoma pork crop into Mexico. 2017, $41 million worth of wheat into Mexico. It doesn't count that virtually half the corn consumed in Mexico came from the United States. So getting back into our neighboring countries in a more equitable way, they're our biggest trading partners, our neighbors. This is just critically important, too. And finally, now, with the passage, as we speak, of USMCA, the doors are open, and we're back to doing business. Thank goodness.
So in the case of the USMCA agreement, we're still waiting on Canada to give their final approval. Their legislature will be approving apparently late January. Still, there's some more details got to be finalized. In other words, some of the regulations, some of the trading rules have got to be codified off of this agreement. So I guess what Congress will continue to offer some oversight in all of these areas, both China as well as USMCA.
Bottom line is we will, those of us who care about being able to sell into the world market and selling to our neighboring countries, will aggressively push the administration to work out all of those details, get everything implemented. I don't expect any problems with the Canadian Parliament ratifying this version of USMCA. The big challenge was getting it out of the United States House and getting Mexico City to agree to it. Again, we'll just need a little time to flesh out the final rules and to start moving product.
We've obviously got quite an adventure ahead of us in the U.S. Senate for the next one or two weeks, maybe 3 weeks or so, because of the impeachment trial. It's obviously a presidential election year, congressional election year. What's going to be? Can Congress get anything really done in a year that's divisible by four?
Oh, Ron, the impeachment process over in the Senate and. And we always need to remember that in the way the Constitution works, the House, by voting impeachment, in effect sets as a grand jury, votes an indictment. I did not vote for the articles of impeachment. Now the United States Senate will set as a court, with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court acting as a courtroom to allow the Democrat impeachment managers prosecute the case. The president will be able to defend himself with his attorneys. I don't expect the president to be removed. I don't expect by that to mean a conviction in the Senate, but it will cause all sorts of gyrations for several weeks, potentially a month in the Senate schedule. So what can be accomplished for the remainder of the year in an election year? If you look at Speaker Pelosi's schedule, she really doesn't want to have a whole lot of legislative days in the United States House the remainder of the year. So I hope we do the appropriation bills, we fund the federal government on time, all those things that affect ag and defense and education and transportation, all those sort of things. I would hope that there's still a possibility of an infrastructure bill dealing with ports and harbors and airports, those sort of things. But no, don't expect the environment to get any better with the circumstances we're in.
One other question. You know, obviously you remain off of the House Agriculture Committee here in 2020. What are you hearing with Congressman Conaway retiring, not seeking re-election here this fall? Who is going to possibly be either the ranking member or the chairman, depending on how the elections go come November? Who's out there that maybe's got the inside position for that job?
Right now, we have a four-way race. G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania has served a critical key role when we did the nutrition title under the 2014 Farm Bill. Worked very closely with Mr. Conaway in the 2018 Farm Bill. But then you also have our neighbor from Arkansas, Rick Crawford, very diverse agriculture, subcommittee ranking member. He's a factor. Austin Scott from Georgia, a very diverse agricultural state too, certainly is in the mix. And maybe to the surprise of some, but the Republican ranking member on House Administration, Rodney Davis, I think, would like to be ranking member or chairman also. You look at those three individuals, Pennsylvania, a very heavy focus on smaller traditional farms. The dairy industry up there is important. Glenn's a lifelong resident. You look at my neighbor, Mr. Scott from Georgia. Georgia is the most amazingly diverse agriculture. And in fairness, having a former Georgia governor, Secretary of Ag now, is something to factor in. Rick Crawford, our neighbor just across the line, I say just across the line, who represents kind of the northeastern portion of Arkansas, Mississippi Delta agriculture, very diverse group, very bright fellow. And Rodney, who is from corn and bean country in Illinois, I think will be well represented in that role. My critical goal this time around, Ron, is that we do well enough in the November general elections and the ratios between Democrats and Republican members change so that there are more Republicans, which will help facilitate me returning to my home on the Ag Committee.
That would be your desire at the end of 2020, right?
You can't keep me away from the next Farm Bill, no matter how hard you try.
Indeed. Thank you, Congressman. Congressman Frank Lucas of Oklahoma's 3rd Congressional District, of course, a current member of the Science Committee, ranking member of the Science Committee in the U.S. House of Representatives, and a former chairman of the House Agriculture Committee. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.